My name is Nate Mickle. You're listening to Mickles and Dimes Layer 2, where every interview is dedicated to the simple, the practical, and the underappreciated. Lori Santos is the teacher of the most popular class in Yale's history, Psychology and the Good Life. She is the host of the Happiness Lab podcast, which has been downloaded more than 85 million times. And she is the creator of the Science of Well-Being on Coursera, which has more than 4 million enrollees. Her work has been featured in the New York Times, NBC Nightly News, The Today Show, GQ Magazine, Slate, and O Magazine, among others. And Time Magazine named her a leading campus celebrity. I hope you enjoy learning from Lori Santos today, because I certainly did. Lori, it's so great to connect today. I love your work on happiness and well-being, so I'm excited to chat.
Awesome, yeah.
Are there one to two lessons you've learned about happiness that you would most like to pass on to others?
I mean, yes, in the sense that there are lots of lessons I've learned about happiness that I have to apply to myself. I teach this class about happiness, but I also like use it myself, being a human who has mistaken intuitions about the kinds of things that make us happy. I think the one that I use myself the most often is kind of remembering that our thought patterns are just thoughts. That we are not our thoughts. And the cool thing is that we can change our thoughts. And sometimes the way that we think can have a huge effect on our behavior in ways that we don't really expect. And so one of my favorite thought patterns that I work all the time to change in myself is the thought pattern of self-criticism. We tend to have these really messed up theories about how we should motivate ourselves. I think we think that we're most motivated when we speak to ourselves like a drill sergeant. We like scream at ourselves in our head and push ourselves, you know, past our boundaries and things like that. And the research shows that that kind of self-criticism doesn't really work in the way we think. And in fact, we'd all be better off adopting a different form of self-talk that researchers like Kristen Neff at UT Austin talk about in terms of self-compassion. So Kristen Neff's definition of self-compassion includes a few different components. One is mindfulness, which means recognizing what's going on. Like, this is really tough for me right now. I'm having a tough day right now. You know, this interview's not going well. This exam's not going well, whatever it is. But kind of owning it and admitting it to yourself. The next part of self-compassion is to talk to yourself with kindness, right? Like, it's going to be okay. Talk to yourself like you would talk to a friend, right? Like, can we get curious about this and kind of figure this out? But the final part of this form of self-talk, the one that I find even most difficult, honestly, is this idea of common humanity, right? Like, I'm only human. I'm not going to be perfect. I'm not some like perfect robot that's going to get everything right all the time. I'm going to have bad days too. And Neff's research is amazing. She finds that engaging in this form of self-talk where you kind of mindfully are kind to yourself and admit your failings, it can reduce procrastination. It can allow you to develop more of a growth mindset. It actually reduces trauma in individuals like who are in situations like with PTSD, like Afghan vets and these kinds of things. It allows you to be nicer to your future self. It's just a form of self-talk that's like incredibly powerful and helpful.
What a great lesson. We're not our thoughts. We can change our thoughts. Recently, I was listening to Peter Attia talk about an experience he had where he was depressed and really on the verge of self-destruction. And I just thought it was so powerful what he shared about how his therapist taught him that rather than just be super self-critical of himself whenever he would mess up and just say the most terrible, horrible things to himself, the therapist said, just pretend like you're your friend advising. You know, like what would you say to a friend if they had made that same mistake? And it's like, he would have talked so nicely and supportively. And just by making that one change, and then he actually had to write it down and share it with his therapist, he felt like he was able to get rid of this just super negative voice in his head.
And I think that, you know, one of the other lovely things about this idea of talking to yourself like you talk to a friend is that, like, you know, if it's a real friend, you wouldn't let that person off the hook. Like, if your friend was like really screwing up or really doing something self-destructive, you wouldn't like scream at them, but you also wouldn't be like, that's cool. Like, you know, like you're perfect. Like, you'd say like, hey, what, like really curiously, like what is going on? Like, what can we do to help? Like, can we get curious about this? I care about you. I want you to do better. And that's what's powerful. I think sometimes when we think in terms of self-compassion, we think like we're going to let ourselves off the hook we won't be motivated to do stuff. Like, we're just going to sit on the couch and eat bonbons or something like that if we talk nicely to ourselves. But this idea of talking to yourself like a friend, like, you wouldn't let your friend do that. You'd want to push your friend a little bit, but you do it in a way that was kind. And so, yeah, I love that story from Peter. I think that's so powerful.
Is this something you're doing like weekly, monthly, or is this a daily practice that you have?
Oh my God, like more than day, like moment to moment, right? I mean, no, seriously. I mean, I think, you know, even you're just an example from today, right? You know, I've been trying to get back into yoga. You know, I kind of got out of my fitness routine a little bit. And in my brain, it's like, my first thought is like, okay, you have to do yoga today. You know, you didn't do it yesterday. You got to do it today. Should. And like, I'm feeling like, and when I listen to that voice, it, again, it's not as drill instructory, but there's a lot of shoulds. There's a lot of like, you have to do this, right? As opposed to, hey, Laurie, let's get curious. Like, why are you feeling some resistance to go into the yoga class today? Like, oh, I have a busy meeting day. You know, I'm chatting with you for my podcast. I'm doing this other podcast interview. Okay, so what do you need to, you know, open up some space to be able to get to your yoga? It's a completely different feeling than the feeling of like, oh, I'm supposed to do this. You really should. You know, you don't want to get, you know, out of shape and things like that, right? And so that's just like this moment to moment practice. And honestly, I'm trying to train my brain to do that in so many different situations throughout the day.
Really interesting. I was talking to Brad Stolberg recently, and one thing he shared is that fierce self-discipline requires fierce self-compassion. And it's similar to what you're talking about here. I love the like moment to moment. How would my friend help me in this situation? And every day I wake up and it's like, I gotta go exercise. And I really like this approach of being a little more thoughtful with myself, a little more kind if I don't feel like it, and try to figure out why. And then either, you know, get to a place where I can go exercise and feel good about it, or get to a place where, look, I can't and I still feel good about it.
And the fierce self-compassion is powerful, right? If it was your friend would be like, well, what's going on in your schedule that you can't do it, right? Like, oh, there's that dumb meeting you signed up for. Like, well, tell that person you can't make it. Like, your exercise is more important, right? That's what I tell my friend. But using this sort of fierce self-compassionate talk, it allows me to give myself the permission to do the same thing. So powerful.
Yeah, great. Okay, any other lessons you would most want to pass on?
I think the second lesson I would pass on, which I actually think empirically is just the biggest kind of thing that positive psychology tells us we can do to improve our happiness, is to make sure I'm investing in social connection. You know, this is something we all know, right? That friends make us happier. But when push comes to shove and I've had a tough day, sometimes my instinct is just to plop down on the couch and watch Netflix, right? Like, I don't want to engage in the little bit of startup cost it takes to call a friend or reach out and make an appointment to kind of hang out, like make a date with someone. Like, sometimes that feels really costly. The data just suggests it's so good for our well-being, and we're going to enjoy it so much more than we think. This all comes from some lovely work by Nick Epley that shows that we often mistake the benefits that we're going to get from engaging in social connection. We assume like, oh, it'll feel fine, but it'll feel great. It'll be energizing in this way we don't expect. It'll kind of reap happiness rewards down the line because those people that we reach out to will reach out back to us and so on. And so, yeah, I think engaging in social connection, even when I don't feel like it, is something that I would pass on to other folks and something that I try to do myself too.
This is a lesson that, you know, like you said, we know it, we've heard it. I just think it's so underappreciated. And I was just at the doctor's office a couple of days ago, and I was checking in, and the person checking me in, as I said my name, they were looking up some info, and I pulled out my phone to like do some Duolingo or something, you know, and I'm like, what are you doing? Put it away. Like, I don't have to be so hyper focused on efficiency that I can't just like engage with this person. And I love, I think I heard a phrase from Nick that I love: when in doubt, reach out. And I just love that idea of like, we're just going to feel better than we expect. We underappreciate how good we're going to feel by doing very simple things when, for example, investing in social connection.
And I think, you know, your example of, you know, whipping out your phone to do Duolingo, I think is one that we can all relate to, right? Like, we have such an easy go-to with our phones, right? Where we can just grab them out. And maybe that feels a little bit easier than, you know, leaning over to the person who's sitting near you in the waiting room and be like, you know, so how are you? How's your day today? Kind of thing. We just forget that it's beneficial. I think we just don't really understand that it can really help us out. And so for me, I've had to make a really explicit commitment to try to do this, that that kind of social connection doesn't come easy for me. I'm like from the Northeast and, you know, very like city girl. We like just don't talk to people, right? And so I've had to kind of push a little counterculturally to get a bit more social than would be my natural instinct. But I think it's really helped, right? It definitely makes time fly by in those waiting situations that you're talking about. But I think it allows for real connection when you do that reaching out with the people you care about. You know, just this morning I was putting on this scarf that you're seeing me wear because we're talking over Zoom. I'm wearing this red scarf and it's a scarf that my mom knitted for me like way back in the day, many years ago. And I had the thought of like, oh, I should tell her that I'm wearing this scarf, but I'm like, oh, whatever. But I was like, no, wait, like tell your mom that you're wearing it. Like, it's going to make her day. We're going to have this moment of connection. I'm going to feel good. She's going to feel good. But yeah, we just have to get over these like little teeny tiny momentary costs to reach out, which if we got over them, we'd feel so much better.
Yeah, so great. When in doubt about reaching out to your mother, definitely reach out. And I think it was from your podcast that I learned something about cell phones that also probably gave me a little bit of self-compassion, because the idea is, look, it's no one, like, it's understandable that we want to get on our phones. It's the collection of all human wisdom. It's the greatest library the world has ever known. Like, it's okay that we feel that urge, because we can connect with any person and any person's ideas ever, but that doesn't mean that we should do it. We should still prioritize the social connection.
Yeah, I think we forget that we're going to get more out of the social connection. Yeah, it's kind of more meaningful. You know, if your life ended tomorrow, you know, you wouldn't have wanted to spend that 5 minutes on Reddit, you know, learning whatever the latest thing is in the Reddit feed. You'd want to be like talking to your spouse at dinner or like just connecting with another human, right? Those are the things that wind up really mattering. And I think we just absolutely forget that.
Okay. As we wrap up here, any final tips, any final advice you'd like to share?
I mean, I think the biggest point is that, and this comes up so many of your other episodes, right? Is that we actually have agency over our own well-being, over our own moods, over our own thought patterns. We just have to kind of engage it. And sometimes that agency takes a little bit of practice. Sometimes it feels uncomfortable at first, but the rewards are really huge.
Well, Lori, this is so great to be able to chat with you. I've been looking forward to this for so long, and I've just loved your podcast and love your work, and look forward to trying to apply the things that you've taught here today and try to do. Try to engage in these behaviors in a more consistent kind of daily way. So thank you so much for coming on today, Lori.
Thanks so much for having me. And thanks so much for sharing such short, wonderful tidbits with everyone. I love your stuff too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Mickles and Dimes. What great lessons Lori shared today. First, rather than yell at ourselves like a drill sergeant to motivate ourselves, it can be more effective to practice self-compassion by talking to ourselves like we would talk to our friend. Second, to improve our happiness, we need to invest in social connection. Not only does investing in social connection make us happier, it makes us happier than we expect it will. In summary, practice self-compassion and invest in social connection. Both simple ideas, please take them seriously.